What you listening to, son?
I don't think you like it.
Well, why not? I like this new generation of music.
You're listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.
God, it's all toilet sounds. Where did you record this?
Oh, yeah. You're listening to another thrilling episode of the Toilet of Hell radio show. It's me, Joe Thrashenkill. Here with me today, I've got everyone's good buddy. I'm talking, of course, about Brennicide. Breno, how are you?
Oh, a bit of a face turn this week, huh? I'm everybody's buddy all of a sudden.
Well, I mean, like, Jordan couldn't make it for another week, so, you know, we got to do something to hype up the crowd. They can't just be throwing trash the entire time.
Yeah. You guys got me in the sharpshooter, and I'm bleeding all over my face, and I'm just reaching for the ropes, and I can't quite get it.
That's, anyway, this is not the wrestling podcast.
It fucking should be, though. Like, wrestling's better than metal. It just is.
I haven't really engaged with wrestling in a very long time, so I feel unprepared for that conversation, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I have too. After, we made some jab about, like, the Crown Jewel, like, Saudi Arabian event, and literally stopped watching after that. I've stopped watching in general. I just grew out of it at that very moment, which is still way too late to grow out of something like that.
I mean, I don't watch the WWE. I have not in a very, very long time, but I do, you know, like to stay up to date with whatever, you know, labor or humanitarian violations the company is perpetrating.
I don't know, man. I'm sure there's some sort of humanitarian crisis we can discuss in metal today somewhere. Someone's got to be treating somebody wrong, right?
I mean, that's probably the case. It seems to be always the case. I do want to say that, you know, we tend to go a little bit heavier sometimes on this show. We talk about, you know, pretty dark subjects or whatever, real foul behavior. Mm. I don't really have anything like that on the docket. I think this is going to be a fairly lightweight one, fairly lighthearted. You know?
Okay, this is the kit and gloves episode. We're not looking to hurt anybody or cancel anybody or tell you things that are bad. Everything's bad. We're going to cheer you up this episode. That sounds good.
And I figure the best way to start that off is, you know, I've got this little piece in front of me about, I'd say, one of the most successful mass holes in, you know, in the last 25 years or so. I'm talking, of course, about Sully Erna of Godsmack.
Oh, no. Uh-oh. What did he do? What's he up to now?
I mean, literally, nothing that an article should be written about. This is standard behavior for your average 55-year-old dickhead from fucking Boston.
Did Blabbermouth.net publish this article in question?
Yes.
Of course they did.
Would I have seen this if Jordan didn't tell me to read it? No.
Yeah, man, I miss Jordan. Jordan's been very busy the last few weeks, but we should be back in action with all Trace Amigos on the next episode. But for now, it's just you and I, and I think we're capable enough of tackling this. So,
I mean, between my irrational hatred of Massachusetts and your living in Massachusetts, I think that we can get this one covered.
Well, I, too, have a rational hatred of Massachusetts. So much more rational because of experience. So
exactly, exactly.
I'm more than happy to take this on with that experience in mind. So what's going on with Sully Erna? What's he talking about? What's his problem this week?
All right, so the headline that we got here from Blabbermouth.net, Godsmack Sully Erna rips celebrities for encouraging medical behaviors during pandemic. Quote, shut up and entertain. Encouraging medical behaviors during pandemic is one of those just like tortured sentences that's going to stick with me for a long time.
Just like shut up and stick to XYZ.
Yeah, I mean there is precedence for this. Sometimes we're on the side of that particular thing. Like, you know, Jordan always likes to say, or to invoke Odorous Urungaris saying, like, you know, shut up and play your guitar, in reference to like Kiss.
But like I think that's appropriate when you're talking about Gene Simmons because he talks a lot and he says a lot of stupid things about stupid subjects. So Sully Erna has taken a swipe at celebrities, including fellow musicians who have used their high-profile voices to encourage medical behaviors, saying they should, quote-unquote, shut up and let people live their lives. So
I still love this. Encourage medical behaviors, because that could mean anything. It's like I'm on stage telling you that you all need to get rhinoplasty because your fucking noses are all messed up. Well, I do kind of appreciate that whoever wrote this for, you know, whatever AI bot that wrote this for Blabbermouth, like the first graph here is just like Erna, who recently confirmed that politics played a part in his decision to relocate Godsmack's headquarters to Florida.
Florida.
Which leans Republican in presidential elections. On a, he relocated on a part-time basis while maintaining a home in New Hampshire. He discussed his views on celebrity health campaigns in a new new interview with Mindy Novotny of the Milwaukee radio station 102.9 The Hog.
We thought our name was stupid.
I know. Some fucking Czech lady in Milwaukee on The Hog.
You're listening to 102.9 The Hog.
Oh man, they definitely do that too.
I can just fucking hear it now.
It sucks.
It sucks so bad. Do you want me to read this in his God-given tongue, the things that he said about this?
I mean, if there was anybody that was meant to do it, I believe it's you.
Okay, well, a dramatic reading of Sully Erna and the things he said in this given interview. I get paid to be an entertainer. That's a position I've chosen. So I'll focus on entertaining, making people smile, hearing people through music. And anybody else that's out there in a celebrity status that's pushing people one way or the other, when you have no experience as a medical expert or a politician, my advice is shut up and let people live their lives, because you don't know the consequences when you push them one way or the other. So why don't you just do what you're great at and entertain? Because that's what you are. That's the position I've taken, and that's the position I'm going to stand with. I'm going to write my music. I'm going to put it on great live shows. And I'm going to help people escape a lot of their daily problems. Hopefully, that they have to face regardless.
Erna added, Ich bin ein Wiener.
I've been looking at alternate home area for a while now, and California was kind of on my radar, just because I have a lot of friends there. My business is there, and I love the weather. But when all the political shit went down, it really turned me off to just the thought process and ways for being a lot of the liberals and people that I just can't connect with on that wavelength. So, like, look, I've been to New Hampshire, man. It's just, like, the one capital city that fucks things up for everybody else and makes it a blue state, you know? I don't see why a guy like Sully Erna can't be very happy in a insane Nazi land like New Hampshire.
Yeah, the live free or die liberal state.
Right. It's like we're anti-government unless that government is totally Republican.
Yep.
I don't know. That's it. He's just bitching and whining.
No, I know. It's stupid. And again, I wouldn't have done this if it wasn't Jordan saying that we had to. And he's the guy that runs the show. He says here, so yeah, Corona and politics played a piece of my decision to divert to Florida.
Florida.
I honestly went down there to buy a property with a little bit of room and a decent little house. And I wanted horses. And I knew that Shannon Larkin was kind of in horse country because it's in North Fort Myers.
Myers.
I just came across this really great deal with this lady who had a 20-acre horse ranch. But she also owned a 30-acre pasture next door to it, which is just an open pasture that some guy leases to pasteurize his cows on. And this is a Joe note here. This is not what Sully said. That's not the verb you would use to letting your cows graze in a pasture. That would be to preserve their milk.
I wasn't going to say anything. I picked that up because pasteurization, yeah, that's the process of like making
Louis
milk clean.
Louis Pasteur, not right. To fucking let your cows graze on pasture land, you fucking dipshit. Anyway, he continues here. And it gives me a tax break because it's agricultural, and I get half a cow a year.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm a meat eater too. Not only am I not a liberal, I'm a fucking meat eater.
I'm a fucking meat eater.
I feel like I gotta give him like a badass badge. Like, not only is he not liberal, he eats meat.
Oh damn, dude. There's no liberals that eat meat, man. That's like one of those things only fucking stone cold patriots do.
this is the most dangerous man in America.
He puts his chicken nuggies on 425 and waits for them to bake for 25 minutes.
I do this from time to time where I will promote another podcast. It's always the same one, Street Fight Radio. On their Patreon, Murder Brian does a series called Butt Fest 2000, specifically about, you know, butt rock. Sully Erna has been doing a podcast series since the pandemic started, and Murder Brian plays quite a bit from this. Sully Erna is a barely contained fucking moron. It is essential listening if you like listening to brain dipshits.
Yeah, we'll have to get a couple clips on this show of people being brain dipshits. We don't do that enough.
It's more work.
Yeah, but it's also fun when it all comes together. So, yeah, Sully Erna moving to Florida. Many snowbirds before him.
The whole thing is, yeah, don't get a medical procedure because somebody in a butt rock band told you to. And I guess I can agree with that for the most part. Again, I don't know that like getting a COVID vaccine is the same thing as a medical procedure, but we'll go with that anyway.
Yeah, man. I mean, the vaccine discourse has been what it is and
insufferable.
And dude, honest to God, I don't know if it's where I live. I don't know if I'm just in a perfect storm of conservatism and liberalism where you have on one side people who think that they're going to have their dicks microchipped if they get it. And Joe Biden is going to be able to use them as sleeper agents and force them to become trans or something. And then on the other side, you have like these absolute yoga balls, hippie dipshits who just refuse to do anything to help their kids be less than horribly sick, except feed them raw milk any given fucking moment of the week. And I just, you know, I don't know where to go from here. So
I'm growing a little bit weary of liberals as well, simply because it seems like they have two answers to literally anything happening. One is vote, and the other is get vaccinated.
Right.
And I feel like we're just not going to solve all the problems we need to solve with those two things. The latter one helps a lot more, in my opinion.
Vote blue, no matter who. According to Susan, I'm 62 years old.
So between all of these factions, I gotta say, it sucks.
It's bad. It's bad to be in the United States and find yourself a factionless individual. But good thing we have a radio show, not for the fucking snowflakes. This is about metal music. So back to the music.
I guess back to the music. The most pressing concern that I've got. Sorry, the quote here that I have that is getting used in the press is quote COVID variants of concern.
Variants of concern.
I gotta say that you know I think I'm burned out on this. I've got my vaccines. If you offer me another one, I'll take it. But that's about the extent. I wear a mask literally all day, every day, because I have to. I'm just going to continue moving on with my life. I don't care if we have a new variant or a new variant or an Omarion variant. Like, it doesn't fucking matter to me. It's all the same shit right now.
Yeah, I guess it's just going to be one of those things where every time I need to go to a restaurant or a store or I don't know, somewhere to rent videos. I don't know where the fuck you'd go anymore. I don't know. But if I do go out, I'm going to wear a mask. That's it. I'm just going to wear one. And I don't care if someone says, you don't have to wear that. I'm going to be like, yeah, well, you don't have to be alive. So.
I don't trust my fellow man. No longer can fuck with that. So, you know, take whatever steps and that's it. I think I'm tuning everything out from now on.
Yeah, might as well. You could be tuning into to this think piece, though, which I thought was really, really worth our time and everybody else's. Do you know who Neil Jameson is?
You know, it's been a minute since that name has been invoked on this podcast.
Neil Jameson is the bassist of the band Twilight, and I think Noctmystium, and he was the front man of a black metal band from the U.S. called Krieg. And, you know, you'd think that's what he'd be most famous for, but no.
He was most famous for beefing with Blake Judd.
Right, right. He's precisely most famous for not only beefing with Blake Judd, but also most famous for the think pieces on decibelmagazine.com.
Yeah, if this were, you know, the older days, we would call him a gadfly. But instead, we have to say that he's an influencer in some way, I guess. Let me just ask you this question, because you've been around for a while. I've been around for a while.
Unfortunately.
You know, it's endless. Neil Jameson, I am a fan of some of those later period Knock Mistium records. I think they were doing some really cool shit right before Judd had his complete meltdown and he was considered persona non grata because he ripped off fans.
Yeah.
So I like some of that stuff. I listened to it pretty heavily back in the day. Haven't revisited really. I've never given Krieg much of a chance, but I've known many dudes who were super into black metal in my life. I've never heard one of them like give up some dap for Krieg. Have you?
I don't think I've ever actually seen a Krieg t-shirt in the wild, literally once. Out of all the shows I've ever been to of various above ground and underground metal music, I've yet to see a Krieg shirt. I'm just gonna say that out loud. You can get them. I'm sure you can buy them.
I'm positive they exist somewhere.
Right.
There's a Merch Now site or something like that. But like, it's just one of those things where it's an established name that, as far as I can tell, has no purchase.
Yeah, it's like an NFT. So yeah, I'd hate to say I had like a sordid past with Neil Jameson, but him and I have crossed said paths once or twice. He had wrote a think piece for Decibel years ago, literally years ago, about how vinyl was just like the cure of everything. Like physical media was just the way to push the genre forward. And if you weren't buying it, you were a dickhead. And I argued that there's a lot of upfront cost that comes to physical media. And selling your physical media is definitely not guaranteed for a lot of bands who are in a similar position to Krieg. And that if you're going to be a metal band that's underground, really your best bet is something like Bandcamp or somewhere you can sell your music digitally for people willing to buy it. It's pretty much the only way to make a profit out of selling your music when you're getting started that early. That's just the argument I was trying to make. And instead of reading my article or caring, he just made fun of my pseudonym, which was Brandicide at the time. And this is coming from a guy who has referred to himself as Lord Imperial, N Imperial, SS Angel Raper of the Blood Moon. And, you know, that list goes on. This guy has had very many stupid names and very many stupidly named bands. And I just don't know where he gets off giving me shit about any pseudonym I've ever had.
I don't want to hear shit from a black metal lifer about cringe at all.
Right, right. Right. So
this is interesting though, because this most recent think piece you put in Decibel, it seems to be a kind of about face from all of that.
Yeah, it's actually interesting how related it is, because it just shows what something like a cataclysmic event like we had the last couple of years can do to what people think the future is going to go like.
Yeah, so I would like to preface this whole bit here with saying that, you know, I don't necessarily like Neil Jameson. I do think he makes some good points in here. He just writes like a dickhead.
Yeah, like he'll say something I agree with, but he'll say it like, what's the word I'm looking for? It's like a metaphor that a high schooler would come up with.
Well, let's go ahead and get into it.
Sure.
This one is called Adele Record Store Day and Why You'll Take CDs and Like It. And I just got to say, as somebody who has zero working CD players at the moment, I don't know if that's true, man.
I don't know if I'm going to like it, and I'm not going to do it either.
All right, here we go. We're just gonna dive right into it. We just approved the test presses. The record should be out in August. I'm paraphrasing a bit, but the time frame is correct. The band I spoke to about this had their masters submitted to the press plant in November of last fucking year. That's a turnaround of 21 months. I'm personally working on a few vinyl releases, and every label I've spoken to, regardless of country of origin, has said the same thing. Cool, see you in a few years. Plenty has been said over the last decade about how the independent music scene's long-standing love of vinyl has kept the format alive when the mainstream all but abandoned it, only to have that get thrown back in their faces once the major labels caught wind of it thanks to the proliferation of social media and wieners in Red Hook with ironic mustaches and organic window herb gardens and probably a fucking unicycle, splattering themselves with the records they more than likely only took out once as showpieces during wine tastings.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there. Does anyone realize that hipsters, the way that we've mentioned them in like the Portlandia sense, haven't been a thing since at least 2011?
Yeah, this is some real, this is blabbermouth.net commenter shit.
Like, it's like, real, what are you guys, metal hipsters?
Fucking hipsters in Red Hook. I don't think Red Hook has been like a cool place in a good decade either.
Yeah, ironic mustaches and organic window herb gardens. But that chin beard Neil's got, that's not ironic at all. He thinks that looks cool.
Just, they got a fucking unicycle. They're listening to Justin Gaber.
Who's this, like, who is this guy that Neil Jameson thinks exists that's, like, hurting him so much?
I don't know, man. I've met one person in my life that rode a fucking unicycle, and he was some, like, millionaire tech dipshit in San Francisco. He didn't, like, listen to music. He was mostly interested in, like, Ron Paul.
And it's like, if you got a guy who has an ironic mustache and a window herb garden and he's got a unicycle, I don't know if he's then going to have a wine tasting.
There are too many pieces at play here of this character you constructed in your mind.
Yeah. I mean, at least bring it down to like an IPA tasting or something. Like a home brewery tasting.
It's still pretty out of date. I think you would have to go with like a sour, right?
I suppose so. But the point he was making before I cut you off is the majors then slowly returned like an abusive boyfriend trying to weasel his way back into your life once you finally got into a good place so that he could fuck it all up again.
That boyfriend's name is Neil.
I just like that he has to go to the top shelf with his metaphors here. Like I was saying, it's just like, oh, you guys don't get to press records as quickly as you used to. Let's equate that to the abuse of women.
Now that you say it, I can't help but read this as like a really angsty kid just trying to shoehorn whatever interests he has at the moment into his English essay.
So he continues, and the breaking point was the bricks used to pave the road to hell, record store day.
That's a pretty tortured metaphor. The breaking point was the bricks used to pave the road to hell.
The road to hell.
The breaking point was the bricks used to pave the road. This is bad writing, Neil. I'm sorry. I get what you're trying to say, but you need to revise it.
Yeah.
All right. I don't want to focus on, you know, mixed metaphors or tortured similes or whatever the fuck. Let's just get right back into it.
Sure, go ahead.
Created over a decade ago to try to help bring attention to the brick-and-mortar indie stores that were doing their best to withstand the paradigm shift of the terminal illness that plagued physical media. Again, this is really bad. Record Store Day was a way for indie labels to create specially curated releases that only indie shops could access. That lasted for a year. Fucking 2 years tops. The first shot was fired by people who would graze at this event only to flip the records on eBay or Amazon for triple what they were initially sold. A feeding frenzy that would last a few days after the holiday, then subside because people's fear of missing out would disintegrate and these records would crater in value. And the flippers weren't just customers. The calls were coming from inside the house. stores got into the action, at least the ones with the ethics of a death camp, like the one I worked at.
Oh, jeez.
The ethics of a death. It's fucking record flipping, you pussy. Get over it.
I've been here for 2 hours at this cash register. Can I go on break yet?
I'm somewhat torn on the issue. The record store day titles had little to no margin, so the ability to gain profit from them was stunted. The initial idea of record store day was that it would drive people into stores and they would, in theory, buy other shit besides the exclusive titles.
No, they won't.
And the few that I worked that wasn't often the case unless you worked in some kind of sale going with it. But then the majors got involved.
Now, have you ever actually been to a record store on Record Store Day?
I did. I've done it, I think, twice, and I realized that nothing there was like anything that I really wanted. I got the one thing that I really, really wanted, like my holy grail record or whatever, and I was like, fuck, this is dumb. I don't want to do this.
I think I went to a record store, like just some random hole-in-the-wall record store by accident on a record store day and then left. I mean, just because I was going to go there to just browse the other shit, but I couldn't find a comfortable place to stand because there were a bunch of people in there.
Yeah, I've made that mistake too, where I've tried to go shopping and saw a line out the door and realized, ah, fuck, I picked the wrong weekend.
Yeah. I mean, what day is Record Store Day? Do we know?
I used to do a piece every year for the site where I ranked all the stupid fucking metal releases that were coming out. And I got bored with doing it because it was just like nothing records, just shit nobody wants.
Just, I mean, and the gimmicks for those records were always really not worth the time and effort to try to obtain them. You had things like maybe a little different album art or...
Yeah, if you like picture discs, which I don't know anybody that likes picture discs. Like,
no, man, even the people who are vinyl snobs hate that shit.
Yeah. I got a double LP set of Steve Reich's Music for 21 Musicians, which is like, you know, a cornerstone of experimental music or whatever. It sounds fantastic. I love it. I'm glad that I bought it. The vinyl itself was so horribly fucking mangled, though. I've been like chipping away this vinyl edge that's just razor sharp, trying to get this extraneous piece of shit off there so I don't ruin everything.
Damn. Yeah, you can continue if you feel it necessary.
A few years after What a Celebration of the Relationship Between Independent Brick-and-Mortar Stores and Independent Labels was originally, collectors paying $75 for online for a One Direction picture disc 7-inch as an investment, much in the same mindset as the award winners who are spending 10 racks on a GIF, sorry, an NFT, and then Record Store Day multiplied and latched onto another proud American tradition, Black Friday. Now, people don't know if they wanted to camp out for 60% off a toaster at Walmart or a fucking Jim Crochet reissue that's on manhole thick vinyl and costs 20 times the used near mint copy of the original languishing a few aisles over. Sure, Record Store Day was bringing people into record stores, but now the majors were tricking them into buying shitty reissues of records that were so common Goodwill would give them to shelters to build forts. he does have a point on there, though. Like, I have seen a number of records that, you know, they ship 30 million in the 70s and they reissue for some reason. Totally unnecessary. Agree with that particular point. Just the writing for it was very, very tortured.
Like, when Michael Jackson died, all the old records like shot up in value and everything like that. But you could find an LP of probably the original pressing of Thriller fucking anywhere.
Yeah.
Just because there were so many of those albums sold around America, they really shouldn't be worth anything. So of course the moment someone like that prolific and the worst possible word he deserves could, you know, when he dies, that's when they jump on stuff like Record Store Day to make a lot of money on some new dumb reissue.
Right. Which, you know, that does kind of go into the current, the bug filled wasteland at the moment, but like we'll continue on here. We'll get to the nut of this. As the years went on, vinyl pressing plants started raising their rates and extending the wait times around the April and November record store days. Between this and shows like Pawn Stars driving the idea of vinyl as investment, as well as human interest pieces on the morning shows talking about the return of vinyl, it eventually gave birth to the unfortunate consequence that is a Taylor Swift vinyl. These are releases that were pressed in the millions. So many, in fact, Walmart and Target have vinyl selections now. The record pressing plants just cannot keep up with the major label hunger for releasing this shit on a format that they themselves declared dead and buried not even 20 years ago. The new Adele record is apparently expected to be the highest selling vinyl record in years, if not ever. Millions of the fucking thing are being made to keep up with the demand. And that new Taylor Swift? It's a fucking 4LP set. The only plus side is that it's pressed onto 45 RPM, and her fans have no idea what kind of sorcery this is.
I did think that the image she included was pretty funny.
Yeah, I'd seen this going around on Twitter for a while. It's like, mine has a man singing on it?
Yeah. What a bad decision.
It doesn't make any sense to me to put it on a 45 RPM. Surely there was a reason for it, but I can't see what that was.
Probably not. It was just someone who didn't really know what they were doing just pressed it onto 45 RPM, thinking that was the right thing to do.
Seems That's silly to me. Assume.
Yeah.
These are probably the two biggest examples of why the shitter's full at the plants and why half the records being put into queue right now for smaller bands will probably only come out years after they've broken up. You see this shit on Wayfair commercials where a bunch of 30-something white people all dressed in sweaters are sitting around listening to vinyl while drinking wine.
And they were back at wine again.
I've never seen a fucking Wayfair commercial in my life, have you?
No, man, because I'm a 30-something who only has, like, Netflix and fucking Hulu. I don't watch anything else.
Yeah, I'm a 30-something wearing a sweater right now. I'm drinking a Kratom, not wine, though.
Because it's cold.
Yeah. The people buying vinyl in bulk now are the same people a few years ago whose music collection was a few soundtracks and maybe a greatest hits collection. I don't know what he's reading into that there. That seems like a pretty big leap, I suppose.
So let me say this again. The people buying vinyl in bulk now are the same people a few years ago whose music collection was a few soundtracks and maybe a greatest hits collection. I mean, if you're really going to hit people where it counts, you got to understand that most normies, because this is what this is. This is just a big rant about the normies making vinyl for Justin Bieber. You know, it's like, this is all this shit is. And those people only listen to music on Spotify and YouTube. 100%.
And at the same time, I think that this is such an older view of people, young people essentially, that listen to music. Like, he's doing the Justin Bieber thing, not understanding that kids can listen to and do listen to the weirdest shit on YouTube. Like, who knows how many of these people are just big fans of like 1980s Japanese city pop. Like, that shit is so popular on YouTube. Like, it's insane.
Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Got her ass.
Who cares about Taylor Swift? Like, how passe is talking shit about Taylor Swift?
We're so far after the fact, man. Anyway, let's continue here. Indie labels are fucking crippled, especially the ones that only do a few releases a year and are run by people who have full-time jobs and not enough money to allow a few thousand to be tied up, sometimes now for years. You're going to see a lot of labels shutter their doors because of this, and even more never getting off the ground because of an 18-month wait for a 7-inch isn't worth the stress.
Oh, no.
And I will tell you right now, no effort is worth your 7-inch release.
Not at all. Just not at all.
Do an LP. What the fuck is this? If you want to talk about, like, hipster affectations or whatever, it's putting out a fucking 7-inch.
Yeah, right. Like, the guy with the unicycle is the most likely guy to give a shit about what the fuck a 7-inch is that's not a dick. Like,
seriously.
Shut up. Okay, anyway.
So where does this lead? Cassettes? For the last few years, there's been a massive cassette revival in underground music for a few reasons. They're cheap to produce and they have a quick turnaround time. Well, I should say were and had. The cost of manufacturing cassettes has steadily gone up the past few years, mostly because the demand has gone up. And again, this is America, and we love nothing more than to gouge the fuck out of the consumer. But at least there's only a few week turnaround, right? Yeah, no. Those container ships that are just chilling at sea, they have screws on them. Little screws that go into cassettes. Little screws that are going fucking nowhere. So now the cassette plants are slower than usual. Factor in that indie labels are now using cassette versions as stopgaps for the vinyl they're waiting 8 fucking trimesters for, and this leads us back to a format that even most indie labels have given up on, the CD. I gotta say, like, his whole thing, there's container ships full of screws on them. They'll get there, dude. It's fine. they're not going to stay on the sea forever. They'll get to wherever they're going.
Yeah, you can get those anywhere. They're everywhere. It's fine. But I mean, I'll hold my tongue until the end of this think piece.
All right, let's go to the CD. Okay. I rarely buy CDs, mostly because my car doesn't have a CD player, and now my laptop doesn't have a disk drive. But years back at the record store, I made sure we began carrying CDs in strong capacity because somewhere down the line, I figured there would be some kind of CD revival. And I was somewhat right, but not for the reasons I thought. I swore it would be nostalgia, much like the record boom 10 years ago, since nostalgia is in the driver's seat for nearly everything cultural for anyone over the age of 23. But no, it's not those rose-colored glasses. In fact, it's more artificial than that. CDs are now the best way labels can keep themselves afloat while they have money tied up in vinyl and cassette. And CDs have gotten the wet shit covered into the stick for years now, much the way vinyl did in the 90s. You still make CDs? Kind of stigma, generally said by some asshole with a cassette collection which they've never taken off the shelf. I have no issue with CDs. For decades, they were my main source of listening, and I'm glad labels have an outlet to be able to release something physical. Okay, I mean, it's a lot of whining here, but we can continue. Or do they? Now even CDs are starting to be backed up at plants, and for once, this isn't the major's fault. They still pump out CD versions of all their mainstream artists, albeit to decreasing annual sales. But if those wine-drinking assholes catch winds that CDs are cool again, it'll only take a few minutes before the major labels try to slip a finger in like Ted Cruz at a dog park. I think that was a joke.
I don't know if I get it. Maybe that's just me.
But if the wine drinkers decide that CDs are cool again, then you can't make CDs anymore because the majors will be making CDs again, which they already do in higher quantities than everybody else.
What's this guy got against drinking wine?
I don't know. It's just I understand where he's coming from with the vinyl thing. Like, yeah, there are like 2 plants in the country and they've got more work than they could process. So yeah, there's a huge delay until the demand for that goes down. There's going to always be a delay with the vinyl, right? It's just not the case with cassettes or CDs. What he's complaining about here with cassettes is that there are screws on container ships. Well, the screws will get there one day and you can get your capacity back up. And as far as I can tell, there is nothing that can happen that would, you know, cause CDs to be able to drop off and diminish capacity other than, as he's saying, wine drinking assholes decide that they're cool again. Then it all goes to hell.
You can 3D print a cassette. I mean, sure, there's the little screws, but there's no shortage of plants making little screws. Like you said, they'll get there eventually. The backup of resources that we have going on globally, that's a temporary issue. I don't think there's ever going to be new vinyl plants.
No.
So, you know, where does that leave you? You know, as someone who cares so much about vinyl, like, I feel like the draw of it was how it was just like a limited format from a prior age. Like, I feel like every vinyl record should be something that came out in the 70s. Like, there's like a coolness factor for me to pick up like Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen if it was on like a really old vinyl record. I don't really see the allure of getting something that was pressed in 2021, but I don't know, I don't either, at all, man.
And
maybe that's just me.
A few years ago, I was picking up new metal releases on vinyl, and then, you know, you put it on, you're like, this actually sounds kind of shitty.
Right, because every single metal album that has been produced in the last 40 years was done so digitally. It was done with digital audio interfaces in a computer on a digital audio workstation. It's all computer shit. You're just taking the fucking WAV file that you made on the computer and you're just smashing it on this old dead format that wasn't supposed to take it.
Yeah. But like yesterday I went to a garage sale and I bought Buck Owens Live at Carnegie Hall, which was recorded on fucking reel-to-reel tape, and I bet it sounds great as soon as I can put it on my record player.
I mean, I guess there's been bands who fucking record on reel-to-reel tape just to be assholes about it, but it just,
my last band did that.
Well, yeah, but you did it because you wanted to be more authentic than the next guy, and it just really doesn't apply to anything. It's just, I don't know. It changes the sound a little bit, but maybe in a worse way than a better way than a lot of people think. Like what they enjoy about the vinyl record is the noise and the pops and the fucking bullshit that comes along with listening to something like that. I don't know. You can get a nice set of speakers set up with anything. You can plug them into your fucking computer. You don't have to. I don't get it. I don't. And like I said, I was going to hold my tongue until the end, but I just don't give a fuck about physical media. I don't think it's important. I don't think it matters. And I never will. I don't see the point of it.
I like to, you know, my record collection now is mostly shit from like the 50s, 60s, and 70s, right?
Right.
That's what I think sounds best with all this vinyl. I got a lot of stuff from, you know, from the last couple of decades. I don't listen to it as much. I prefer listening to it on Bandcamp or, you know, wherever. That's
right.
That's just where I'm at.
Because that's the most convenient way to listen to music is on the computer or on the phone where you're spending most of your time anyway.
Right.
And I will always stand by the fact, and this is just a fact, that vinyl records, cassette tapes, CDs, these were the most efficient, top-of-the-line technology in terms of distributing music. Like, that's all these things were just platforms to distribute music to people who wanted to listen to it. There really wasn't any case to make about one format being better or superior to another for whatever reason. It's just, here's how we get people to hear the fucking sound. It's this piece of vinyl with an electromagnetic fucking needle or some shit that scrapes against it every so often, and you fucking hear music out of the speakers. Like, it was just what they had back then. Now that's YouTube and Spotify, and it's fine. It sounds great. I don't care what anyone says. It sounds fucking fine. It sounds like the music was intended to sound like.
When I go see a band and I like them, I want to buy their t-shirt at the merch booth, right?
Right.
If they have a cassette for less than $10, I will buy that cassette. That is about the extent of what I'm going to do right now.
Right, but why did you buy the cassette? So that you could go home and listen to it?
You got to understand, Breno, that I have 3 cassette decks because I make cassettes for the site.
Yeah, I get that.
So I listen to the cassettes because they're they're more convenient than any other thing for me right now. Like if I'm listening to music on my big analog speakers, not my computer speakers.
Oh, okay. So it's just the way that your music is set up in your like most superior stereo setup, the cassette player is right there.
Yeah. I've got my nice record player. To be honest with you, man, like pulling out the vinyl, it's sometimes I don't even want to fuck with it. So, you know, the cassette's right there. It's easy. Who gives a shit? It's whatever you prefer. It's consumer choice, which doesn't fucking matter. It's whatever you want. But let's go ahead and finish this thing off, because this is where I think he gets into his first good point. and we're at the end here. So almost done. So what's the end point here? Vinyl is fucked. Cassettes are fucked, and CDs, while on the rise, are riding an artificial wave and are probably fucked as well. I fully expected to see the death of physical media in my lifetime, but I didn't expect it to happen like this.
You already did!
Yeah. And if all this physical product is in limbo, then what's the point of record labels? Bands can digitally release their albums themselves, which allows far greater artists' autonomy, freedom to maneuver their way across their own progression, without input from pushy A&R types or the freedom to crash and burn with their pants around their ankles and everyone laughing at their tiny dicks. It's a complete paradigm shift that was already in motion, but I thought it would be driven by technology, not the lack of tiny screws and a 4 LP set that the people who bought it can't figure out how to play. So here we are at a very confusing and somewhat depressing time to be people who love music enough to make it our lives, and casual fans who are still reading as well, where we can't move forward with anything because there needs to be another Fleetwood Mac Live LP for a Record Store Friday, and are sitting with an uncertain future. And the brick and mortar stores, this impacts them as well, as raising production costs means higher wholesale costs and lower margins. It's the butterfly effect, only with a shitty soundtrack that people keep playing at the wrong speed. Finn.
Here's what Neil Jameson needs to understand, is that physical media, as in terms of music, it is fucking dead. It's dead. Okay. Just because you have all these pieces of plastic left lying around that can choke a sea dolphin somewhere, that doesn't mean that those markets are dead in terms of really the only way to measure consumerism. Like, if you were to actually look at how many people buy CDs still, it's like a number that isn't even scalable on the percentage of the human population. Like, you just it's not enough fucking people for it to even be considered. And that's the same thing with cassette tapes and vinyl as well. The grand majority of people aren't buying that stuff.
Yeah, and when we're talking about independent bands putting out physical media, we're talking about margins of somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,000.
Right, we're talking about like just, it's like a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percent when it comes to the market for this stuff. And yeah, you're gonna find enthusiasts anywhere for fucking anything. Anything. Think of it. I mean, look, V8 muscle cars are dead. You still got people fucking driving them. That doesn't mean that they're going to keep putting those out. Like, eventually you're going to have the electric car, right? And eventually gas stations are going to slowly go away and gas will get a little more expensive or less expensive depending on how the demand for it goes in that future time. But eventually you're going to switch over to electric cars. That doesn't mean there's not going to be guys who are still driving their shitty Honda Civics because they just love that time of the world. So it's been dead. I don't know what he's getting at in terms of this concern about it going to die. It's a dead horse, man. You're just beating it. That's all it is.
Yeah. And what he gets to in that final graph is something that, you know, you and I have talked about for years. What's the point of a record label? Great question.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I really don't lament the same way he does about these chump change, like couch cushion coin ran fucking record labels that really don't serve that much of a purpose these days.
No. And also he makes a reference here that I find utterly baffling. He's like, you no longer have input from pushy A&R types. When the fuck have you ever dealt with an A&R type?
I don't even know what A&R means.
It's like the guys that are supposedly, you know, advising you on what to do to get promotion shit.
Oh,
like,
God.
Those exist for like a handful of bands. Like fucking Maroon 5 has A&R types. Krieg does not.
And if it does, then he's giving money to somebody he shouldn't be.
Right. It's like I don't think that A&R is a thing. It has not been for 10 years for most of the shit that we would listen to. So I don't know. He's coming to the party a little bit late on this one, I reckon.
Oh, of course he has. And, you know, I don't think Neil Jameson is the worst guy in the world. You know, I know
we've been shitting on him like probably more than he deserves on this one.
yeah. Right. Like, I know the point he's trying to make. And that's how like major capitalist consumerism is crushing a hobby. I know how that sucks. I get it. But I just personally don't care. Maybe that's my problem.
I think I had some care in the past and I can't summon anymore.
What I can say is that I can kind of understand people who are enthusiasts and hobbyists going for physical media like vinyl records and like cassette tapes, because it's just sort of this weird window into past dead technology, and it's kind of fun to hear how shitty it sounds. I get that. But CDs are just probably the most useless physical media ever, in the fact that they do nothing but play digital sound files. That's what they do. And the internet wasn't fast enough to play those things in a way that you could just play them continuously over your internet connection without some sort of interruption.
If anything, CDs are just as much of an affectation. Like, buying a CD in 2021 is just as much of an affectation as having an ironic mustache, I guess.
I mean, I guess so, but
it's all the same thing. This is just, it's hobbyist shit. There is no point to any of it. It's all unnecessary. It's just something that you do because you enjoy it, which is fine. So him tripping all out over Taylor Swift and stuff because, you know, she shitted up the records plants, like, it really just seems like making a mountain over a molehill, right?
I mean, of course. And I mean, it affects him personally because he loves vinyl records, I guess. And I guess he loves them in a more deeply involved way than, you know, hipster bacon mustache guy that this villain he's created in his head.
Yeah, I mean, he listens to vinyl the wrong way, but Neil listens to it the right way. So right, that's the difference.
I correctly listen to music on a vinyl record, not like you. When I play it on my turntable, I'm doing it right. I care the correct way. I am not drinking wine. There's no wine in my house. That bottle could be like $10 I don't have.
Yeah, so it's, you know, nerds complaining about nerds.
So basically we just read like a Reddit comment.
Oh, boy, when you put it that way.
What else can it be? It's just like a guy who is this just vinyl obsessed esoteric weirdo who is just mad about other vinyl obsessed esoteric weirdos.
It's nothing makes you hate your hobby like getting online and seeing other people enjoying it.
I couldn't put it better myself. Do we have any other story, any other angle we can approach this week before we let everybody go on this episode?
Do we have any? I guess let's check the clock. Do we have any time? Because I got a million things that I could yell about. I mean, nothing. I don't have anything timely or anything like that. Just a bunch of shit that's been in my head.
Yeah, let's just chat for a bit then. You know, we'll just def jam poetry here for a while.
All right, so this is on my mind simply because it happened yesterday. I put on this 1975 outlaw country music documentary called Heartworn Highways yesterday. My wife had never seen it. I put it on. It's a documentary that covers a bunch of dudes that were kind of coming up big in the 70s. Guys like Townes Van Zandt, Charlie Daniels, David Allan Coe, guys like that, you know. You've heard of those dudes before, right?
Yeah, is there like a streaming service you can watch this on, or was
it? I think I watched it on Prime, if I recall correctly.
All right, we'll look into that.
Anyway, you know, it's kind of a classic thing. People often share one of the scenes where Townes Van Zandt is playing just this heartbreaking song. And this elderly black man that's like hanging out and drinking whiskey with him just starts weeping while he's playing. Like, it's a pretty, pretty affecting scene. But then there's like the rest of the movie. And the brilliant thing about the way this documentary is done is that there is no narration at all. It's just the guy films whatever's in front of him and he cuts it into something that looks interesting. So I put this on for my wife and she just, you know, pauses it and she's like, this is the decline of Western civilization part two for country music. And it stopped me in my tracks, man. Like, you know, you love decline of Western civilization part two, right?
I haven't seen it for many years, but it's, you know, it's a classic.
It is. It's, you know, young musicians making asses of themselves, right? And sure. It's impossible to watch any other music documentary now and not have that same frame. David Allan Coe gets a good 20 minutes of screen time where he wears this ridiculous rhinestone getup with his name written on his jacket and rhinestones, written on his boots, written on his guitar, with a huge turkey pheasant feather or like across his hat, and goes and plays a few songs at a penitentiary where he's telling stories about how he was locked up and what he did to avoid getting fucked by the other inmates. And it's just an overt liar lying for 20 minutes. And it's so good to watch it in the same context as like the same dickheads from Decline Part 2. Like, oh, you're a late 20s alcoholic who cannot stop lying or doing stupid things on camera. I love this frame for it, man. So that's my recommended viewing for all the listeners that enjoy Decline Part 2.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out myself. 'Cause that's something you see a lot in these art circles, I guess I can say, is just liars lying. Just, I mean, we were talking about it with Kid Rock last week. This guy has just been selling himself as like, I'm a Detroit City punk. Oh! But really, he's just some fucking rich kid who has had his entire career funded for him.
I think it helps to kind of penetrate the posing, as it were, to take a look back, to peel through the layers of, you know, musicians that, you know, have legendary appeal, like you're in the case of Decline, it's Ozzy and Kiss, and just see these people for who they are, which is just train wrecks that happen to be able to write a good song.
I guess we're all just train wrecks. Like, that's just a universal human element. And
I think that's what it is. And I think being able to get through the mystique of any kind of artist is essential for, I don't know, it might not heighten the experience of the music, but it certainly deflates some of the expectations we build around people.
Oh, sure. Because your heroes are never going to be good, perfect people. They're oftentimes not even that talented. A lot of great hit singles and musical careers, they do come up by accident, or they come up way more on purpose in the background than you realize. If you have like, I mean, maybe this is itself like a Justin Bieber rant, but if you have a pretty face on your TV singing to you, most often that person did not write a stitch of their own music. You'll have someone like Taylor Swift say that, you know, I write all my own music, and that's just like objectively not true.
And, yeah, I co-write all my music.
Right. And by co-write, you take a look at the lyrics that you're going to work with, you know, your vocal coach on, and you go, yeah, okay, I can get into that.
So it's just something that I've been ruminating on for years now. And I think that this kind of cracked the code for me. Because we make fun of metal all the time, right? Because metal is not a respectable genre. By intention, you know?
Of course, and, right? It's like an anti-respect genre.
Right. And I think having this key, the skeleton key, that everything is the Decline of Western Civilization Part 2, you know, your soulful songwriter types are just as ignorant as the guy from fucking Rat. I think this is really turned the corner for me.
Yeah. It's just like, it's really just one of those things that is part of growing up, is when you realize that, you know, you're the people you spent your whole time looking up to and your idols and everything, they're just regular fucking Joes. And a lot of them aren't very smart and they aren't really very good at what they're doing. I mean, we talked about it last week with Brent Hines, and, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of young metal guys who really like Mastodon and really look up to Mastodon and think that these guys are really cool when they see them playing on stage and things like that. But you look at a couple fucking interviews with the guy and that falls apart really quick. And so at a certain point you get to our age and we look at these big time musicians and we already have that resolve steeled. Like, we already know that, you know, these guys are probably scumbags that make cool music, so I'm not going to look much further than the music.
It's taken me, however old I am now, to pierce the veil, and I want to encourage everybody to do the same. Because I don't think it takes anything away from the music. If anything, it just makes me appreciate how every single person on this earth is a tremendous train wreck just waiting to derail.
Yeah, and I mean, I think one of the biggest things that has turned me off from the metal scene in the years has been the people involved. A lot of my aspirations for being a musician got cut down a lot because I kind of had to see the people I was going to be rubbing elbows with all the time. And I had to see what kind of blind optimism you had to have about what you were doing and the people you were hanging out with and the scene that you were in, and just how there's like, when it comes to metal, there's like a huge alcoholism problem that's pretty much universal to the genre.
Yep.
So like, I would watch people that were in their 30s and 40s just get like knocked down, ridiculous, screaming on the sidewalk, puking in the car drunk. And I was just like, I don't want to fucking be with these people. These people are 42 years old and their hair is dyed green and they have a chin beard and they're fucking writing think pieces online. They're idiots. I don't want anything to do with them.
I will say that I don't think alcoholism is synonymous solely with metal. I think it seems to be a music problem.
I wonder why that is. Like,
I don't know. I think it's just the environment encourages it, right? I mean, you play a show, you get drink tickets. Like, you might not get paid, but we'll make sure you can get a buzz on.
It is odd, you know, that music inherently is associated with like a party lifestyle, because that's not music at all. Not for me anyway. A lot of the music I listen to by myself or while I'm driving or while I'm doing anything but hanging out with other people. So I don't know why alcohol has fueled spaces for music for so long, but it usually adds up to some really shitty toxic people, which is unfortunate, you know. And I don't want to shit talk people for having a drink. Like, that's fine. You can do whatever you want as an adult, and I'm sure there are plenty of good people out there who do actually drink responsibly. That's like a thing that does happen out in the world somewhere. just not anywhere metal that I've ever seen.
I think that, you know, you kind of hit on something though, that this is not the alcoholism thing is not necessarily like, you're a bad person 'cause you drink or whatever. It's just like, this is an environment that is from 100 years ago encourages specifically this.
Right. And I mean, alcohol makes good people do bad things. Or it allows good people to drop the facade of their goodness to, you know, showcase their badness, you know? So, it really has like kind of killed my social life since I've sort of exited to the left, the metal scene. I'm not really part of it anymore. I don't even remember the last time I bought a band shirt, man. I just don't care anymore. So I'm kind of left wandering in the world. Like, where's my space? Like, who are my people now? Because those really weren't my people, and I've spent probably the better part of 30 years making those people my people. And now I don't know what the fuck to do. Maybe get into like fantasy football or something.
It's fun.
Yeah, I've heard it is. I don't know, maybe I could get into, you know, Dungeons and Dragons. Maybe I could just play Fortnite all the time. I don't know, I'm figuring it out.
I don't know. As I've gotten older, I've gotten more interested in things that would previously bore me to fucking tears. I don't know if that's like a universal thing or not, but I think being open to new interests is a good thing. I think that's a healthy thing. I hope, anyway.
Oh, I mean, do you have any examples of stuff that used to be boring that you're now way into?
I mean, that's the thing. Like, I talk with people all day. I want to know a little bit of something about everything just so I can, you know, carry on a conversation, learn something if they know a little bit more than me. Like, a big thing is, you know, sports. Like, I understand a lot of people hate sports. They hate the environment that the United States around professional sports and all that. But it is a really great way to just engage with a stranger to help carry you through a dead moment.
Right, like to just share your opinions on something that you both have in common is
just to have a moment of bonding with a person. You can establish rapport and, like, you know, make things slightly less lonely in a dark universe.
Yeah, like I've been getting into cars lately, and that community is terrible as well. First of all, to have it as a hobby, like buying cars and building cars, you have to have like a savings account in the six-figure mark. Like, I don't know how anyone else does it otherwise. The guys who I work with who are into cars, basically what they do is they work nonstop overtime. They probably have 2 hours to themselves when they get home, and then they sleep and they go back to work at like 3 a.m. to keep paying for their fucking Subaru WRX STI so they can get that like 20 minutes of joy of driving a car they can't afford to work every day. Like, that's their whole lives.
Man, that seems awful.
Yeah, it's fucking terrible. And I mean, like, I went and got myself like a bit of an enthusiast car that, you know, I could have gotten something more reasonable for a lot less money. But I wanted it, and now I'm paying for it every month. Every fucking month that car payment comes around, and it's a kick in the dick every month. I never like when that comes around because that was $420 I didn't used to have to spend. And I thought it was really funny that it was $420.
Well, yeah, at least you've got a little chuckle every month when you're paying that fucking car note.
I'm broke again. Nice.
I don't really have a closing thing for this other than I think it's a good idea to expand your horizons a little bit, because the last thing in the world you want to be is in your 40s and Neil Jameson.
The one thing that we do have to close on is that I don't know if people listening remember, but there was a guy who got into a lot of guitar magazines and got into a lot of general metal websites and things like that because he claimed that he had made a guitar out of his uncle's bones.
Oh my God. I remember this guy. I think we talked about him on the show, right? Cause this guy hoaxed everyone. Like, he hoaxed the stupid guitar sites, Guitar World or whatever. He hoaxed the lesser metal blogs, and he made his way, like, I think he was hoaxing I want to say like goodmorningamerica.com or some shit like that.
First of all, he's not very popular. Like, if you go on Instagram, he has maybe, this is Prince Midnight is the I don't know if this is just what the guy calls himself, but it could just be the name of his band. It looks to me like he's wearing like a fake blonde wig.
He's wearing a fake blonde mullet.
Yeah, it's like the sort of costume party teased hair thing you would wear if you were just like pretending to be an 80s rocker when you're out of ideas.
Yeah, this is your spirit Halloween mullet pack.
Absolutely. So he got on the map for a while because he had touted this dead uncle's body that he was using to play for a guitar. Totally false, totally not true, definitely not real bones, but everybody bought it and everybody published it.
Yeah, I looked at his Twitter. He retweeted Ripley's Believe It or Not verified account that did a little doodle of him playing his uncle's bone guitar. Believe it or not, Shred the Dead, Prince Midnight of Tampa, Florida, created a Skelecaster guitar from his Uncle Philip's remains.
Yeah, in this particular case, I decided to not, so... So eventually he kind of fell off everybody's radar because he had that, you know, fun little 15 minutes of fame, but, there wasn't any like talent or intrigue behind him as a person.
It's worth noting he's been at this shit for a while. Like, he's been trying to hoax people with various absurd things because I guess it's fun for him. And I got to say, yeah, it does seem very fun to just tell outrageous lies and see who will believe them.
Yeah, yeah, I don't want to chill on him too much, but it's just like, you know, he's not selling out any arenas anytime soon is all I'm saying.
No, it seems to me like he is the lighthearted version of Richard Heen.
We could go with that, but before I delay any longer, he has... pursued a new creative endeavor in terms of the creation of a toilet that is in the shape of Metallica drummer Lars Ulrich.
It just seems to me that like this is a thing that he concocted specifically to get our attention at the Toilet of Hell, right?
It must have been. I mean, you know, far be it from us to pass up on such groundbreaking toilet news, but it looks to me like he had crafted a life-sized replica of Lars Ulrich just sitting there with a pair of drumsticks, and he's naked from the waist down. There really isn't anything genitalia-wise to speak of. The face is absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, I've been seeing this thing getting shared around without any kind of context whatsoever, which it's horrific. It's a horrific concoction, but I am fairly impressed with the craftsmanship.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like, I mean, hey, as far as like the human body anatomically being sculpted, it's not that bad. I wish that effort went to the face a little more, because that's just terrifying. But hey, maybe that's the point.
Yeah, so he says that his toilet is fully functional. It's available for public use December 3rd in the bathroom of the Brass Mug at the Prince Midnight concert there. It's worth noting that the Lars Ulrich toilet does not have any kind of seat at all. So you're just going to be sitting on the rim there if you're doing something that needs to be seated. Otherwise, you know, you should be good to go if it's a standing affair.
Right, right. It's just like the open bowl piss rim that you would have to directly be sitting on. Not to mention your butt would be, you know, you'd be ass to groin with this creepy Lars Ulrich doll.
Yeah. I don't know why he did it, but it seems to me that he likes to create little fun diversions for himself, which I appreciate. My question for you, would you shit in the Lars Ulrich toilet?
With a Lysol wipe in hand, yes, I would.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. I would probably give this a shot.
I mean, one of the cool things is the fact that, you know, you got Lars sitting down there. And if you really channel the flow of your urine and you aim well, you could probably piss all over Lars and it will just funnel down into the toilet that's right around there.
Yeah, I mean, I hope he stress tested this before making it available to the public.
I hope not. I hope not. I hope someone lies in a bathroom covered in like fecal matter, urine matter, and Lars matter, just like all over the floor from an accident when this thing finally breaks.
This will last maybe one poop, then it will be fully destroyed.
Yeah, like someone is going to sit down on this and like the right leg is just going to break right the fuck off.
Yeah, but that's okay. You know, great art doesn't necessarily need to be permanent. It can be, a liminal space.
Whatever you say, Banksy. Man, we gotta go. We gotta let people get back to their little important lives. So why don't you let us know in the comment section below what you would do on the Lars toilet, and if you think that vinyl CDs and tape still have space somewhere in your lives. Just give us the feedback. Also, as always, get in your little Google machine there, or Bing if you're really cool and you use Bing. You can look us up on Patreon, Toilet of Hell, and throw up a couple bones our way, and you can get some bonus episodes and some other extras too if you check it out. So other than that, you got anything to close them off with?
That reminds me, I got to edit the bonus show today. So that's going up in this afternoon. So yeah, do all that. Also remember, we love you, and don't take any of this shit too seriously.
Absolutely. Be a person before a metalhead. That's all I can say, man. All right, guys. Well, keep it as metal as necessary, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Let me tell you, Bobby, there's nothing funny about these sounds. What that person on your tape has is a medical disorder.
You're listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.
I've been here for 2 hours at this cash register. Can I go on break yet?